Hi, John. It's Mark.
Hi, good afternoon, Mark. How are you doing? Okay.
Yeah, I'm really good. I'm just obviously we've been trying to get hold of each other for a few days, a few weeks even. I know you're busy down there in sunny Leeds.
We are. I wish it was sunny. The weather's awful here today.
I know there's a much better audio connection today. I know the last podcast we had a few errors with a few bits of noise on the background, which we've now solved. Hopefully.
Yep. Good.
So the listeners don't have to endure that that whining. But what we've got now is we really want to talk about ingrown toenails. That's this sort of subject for this podcast today.
Right.
So really, we've sort of got a little outline. Let's stick to that. I want to try and get across as much information as I can to the listeners. And you're the expert. Now, I have to admit, I've had a little bit of a dig myself in my own toenails over the years. And I think that's where a lot of people have. Is it something that's really common? Because I've noticed a lot of people on the internet are looking for, you know, answers and solutions referencing growing toenails.
Yeah, I mean, ingrown toenails is obviously quite a common problem that we see as podiatrists. I generally see round about 600 to 700 cases a year in our clinics. Most patients that we see have had a little dig, in inverted commas, should we say, a little bit of home surgery, and obviously that tends to actually accelerate the whole condition. So obviously the first course of action really is not to have a little play around, is to see a professional with immediate effect. So obviously the whole toe doesn't get into the infected state. And in a lot of cases, unfortunately, when people have been having a little dig, quite often the only way to eradicate the problem is to undergo a surgical excision of the nail. Wow. Obviously, we want to try and avoid that. So really, it's all about patient education. Generally, when patients come to see us, if it's in the early stages, whereby they have either had a little go themselves, or either there's been some form of external trauma or tight footwear, etc., they generally start to see a little bit of puffiness or swelling around the nail margin. That's where the side of the nail is parallel to the flesh at the side of the toe. Obviously, pain starts to kick in when more pressure is applied to the area, causing the nail to embed into the side of the flesh. Unfortunately, these things, when they get particularly bad, often when patients have tried to cut the nail in an incorrect way, a small spike or spicule of nail will dig into the side wall of the toe.
Yeah.
And quite often they'll get an infection in there. Normally the first course of action is to try them on some antibiotics and a bit of home treatment, wiping over with sterile wipes, etc., to try and put the infection at bay. But unfortunately, when the problem has gone on for a number of weeks, in some cases months, where they haven't been able to quell the infection, we have to resort to some sort of professional treatment in order to try and remove the nail.
So, I mean, just so I know, let's talk about the signs and symptoms so you know you've got an ingrowing problem, because I know that sometimes you think, oh, that's a bit painful. I know, I've done it myself. You know, I've been wearing shoes and I thought, oh, that, you know, my toe's starting to feel a bit painful, you know, when I touch the edge of the margin of the nail. So how do I know, or how do people recognise that it is an ingrowing toenail they've actually got?
Well, generally, when the problem has been going on for a while, when the nail actually starts to impinge and grow into the side wall of the toe, they start to see some very strange flesh forming. It's called hypergranulation tissue. It looks sort of very red. If you knock it, it can bleed quite profusely and easily. And what's happening is the body is starting to react to the spike of nail growing into the side of the toe. And there are a lot of skin cell changes where this material called hypergranulation tissue tends to grow underneath and around the actual spike to almost lift it away from the edge of the nail margin. Mm-hmm. Normally at that stage is when we tend to see patients. They've normally had some courses of antibiotics which will help quell the infection, But of course, it doesn't sort the problem out. That's normally the end stage. In the early stages, you're going to get some sensitivity in the area. You're going to get some redness and swelling, etc. And sometimes you can get a slight watery discharge, sometimes tinged with blood around the area. But again, just please don't have a go yourself. People tend to use anything from well, I've had patients that have come in that have even tried using screwdrivers to try and remove industrial nail cutters, all this sort of stuff. So just don't mess around. Just get to see a suitably qualified professional who's able to hopefully ease the problem in the first case. But of course, when these signs and symptoms start to develop into hypergranulation tissue, even the healthcare professional, the podiatrist, is not really in a position to be able to eradicate the problem, because there's obviously so much pain involved there. So we often then have to resort to a small surgical procedure to try and successfully remove the edge of the nail that's actually causing the problem.
Yeah, I know, we'll get into that in a minute. I know, because I have actually suffered, and it can be very painful indeed.
Yeah, I mean, taking paracetamol or some other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory is one way of trying to sort of quell some of the pain symptoms. But of course, it's very much like, as an analogy, you could go out into your garden and start pruning your roses. You know, if a thorn comes off and gets stuck in your thumb, well, the first thing you want to do is you want to remove the thorn. You don't want to leave it in there for weeks and weeks until it gets all nasty. You want to try and sort the problem out at its earliest stages.
Absolutely. So when it breaks the skin, is that when it starts, you know, becoming prone to infection, when it's actually broken the skin?
Absolutely. I mean, when the nail bed has pierced the side of the flesh, obviously there's a portal of entry for some bacterial infection to get into that area. That's when you see the skin starting to change, becoming red and swollen, etc. And then eventually it will form this hypergranulation tissue we've just spoken about.
You must have seen some pretty horrible pictures over the years you've been in this game.
Yeah, we've got quite a gallery of nasty pictures, but we don't want to be seeing them. We want patients in who will hopefully take our advice, be educationalised, and not let the problem get to that end stage.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like most things. Human nature being what human nature is, they leave it until it's, you know, past its the initial stages, and it's gone into the more severe stages.
Yeah, certainly people do leave it until it's gone by its sell-by date. I mean, I've seen patients in the past, unfortunately. The cases are sort of fairly rare, but where they've actually left these problems for weeks going into months, and sometimes years, and how people can try to perform sporting activities, go to work, dance, etc., with these extremely painful conditions. I remember someone told me about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a survey done by some company in the Leeds city centre, where they were asking people of all the medical conditions or affectations that you may have suffered, which was the most painful. People may have mentioned, for example, gallstones, this sort of stuff, kidney stones, so I say it was very, very painful, or back pain. But what came out on top, believe it or not, was the ingrown toenail as the most common everyday most painful condition, and we do see a lot of them, unfortunately.
It's almost like, you know, when I think everybody's probably familiar with stubbing the old toe on a radiator spike or something, and it can cripple you for quite a few minutes, you know. I suppose if you have an infection on top of that in a very sensitive area, then I can imagine the pain is amplified, you know, doubly, trebly.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, when people leave these, the infection can obviously track back down the toe up into the ankle. And I've seen cases where the infection has actually tracked up into the nearest set of lymph nodes, which is behind the knee. So obviously then they start getting swelling on the knee, and quite often have to be admitted to hospital for intravenous antibiotics to try and quell that problem.
Wow, that is bad.
Yeah, very bad. I remember last year we had a case where this particular patient, who was also diabetic, and of course diabetics have got to be very, very careful with regards to their foot care, purely because they get desensitization. Their ability to feel their feet is diminished, and unfortunately, this person didn't seek professional advice, and fortunately, the ingrown toenail and the flesh around it became gangrenous, and they ended up with a 4-foot amputation. Thankfully, we don't see many of those, but that's certainly on the gallery of pictures, I'll tell you.
Do you know, it's funny, you mentioned that. My granddad, a long time ago, but he said he used to work on the railway, and one of his pals, apparently they were having a tea break, and he used to pick his toes with a little pair of scissors he had in his wallet. And he did exactly that while he was self-medicating, if you like. He punctured the nail bed, and it got infected, and gangrene set in, and he ended up losing his foot.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
Like, you're telling me that's common?
Well, I wouldn't say it's common. I may see one or two patients a year. Just now, you prompted me. There was a lady who came to see me, quite a heavy smoker, so she obviously had some form of vascular disease as well. Again, a simple ingrown toenail, and it had developed into gangrene. I mean, obviously, this is a very worst case scenario. The infection travelled up her leg. She had poor circulation, and I'm sorry to say that the lady actually had a mid-thigh amputation.
Oof.
So she actually lost a leg. That was a very, very sad case. Yeah,
that just is from a sad case.
just from a simple ingrown toenail. So, got to be so careful.
So let's just. I know we skipped over it very quickly. So, visible signs. What's the visible signs?
So, basically, visible signs are generally redness, swelling, watery discharge, often tinged with blood, pus. Assuming the condition becomes infected, they're the general signs.
Brilliant. And the main symptom is obviously the swelling, where you can that gives you a really true indication.
Yeah, you're going to get swelling around the area where the nail's actually punctured the side wall of the toe. Which is obviously one of the cardinal signs of inflammation.
And I have seen a picture of on that you've given me with in fact we'll put it up for the viewers, but it's can be on both sides, so you can actually have it on both sides, not just on one side, which is more common.
Yeah, you tend to find those patients that present with ingrown toenails, what we call bilaterally on both sides of the toe, they tend to be more associated with a particular nail condition called an involuted nail, where the nail itself doesn't actually puncture the side wall of the toe. The nail tends to curl round on itself. Right. Can catch the nail margin, but also can actually grow back into the nail bed and look very similar to an ingrown toenail. Okay. You can get them on both sides too.
Wow, and is this something that's just men or women? Is it anything?
Ingrown toenail can the condition itself can affect anybody who has a brothel themselves that doesn't go right. Mm-hmm. Generally, the main number of patients that we see tend to be teenagers. Of course, more boys than girls. You know, hot, sweaty environment inside the shoes makes an ideal landing ground for bacteria. Young boys having a little pick while they're watching match of the day, the toenails, etc. So that normally accounts for the majority of the patients we see. But yeah, ingrown toenails can affect any age group.
Any age group. Okay, cool. And the main causes are really down to what? I mean, what actually causes these things? Is it just, you tell me.
Well, there's a number of causes. Obviously, we've already spoken about self-treatment. Other causes, are tight footwear. People who may be prone to ingrown toenails try to shove their feet into shoes whereby there is inadequate room in the end portion, or what we call the toe box at the end of the shoe. When you look at small children, talk about really small children, even tight baby grows can actually cause the nail to ingrow by putting pressure on the nail bed. Mm. Now, what we haven't spoken about is that the nail plate itself, your nails are formed by the germinal matrical cells, as we call, from the nail bed. Now, the shape of the nail bed is often genetically induced, in that the shape of the nail bed will be the shape of your toe. So if a young child is wearing shoes that are too tight, squashing them in the toes, then it will actually modify the shape of the nail bed. So the ensuing nail will follow the shape of the nail bed and make them prone to these types of conditions. So there is also a genetical factor. There's many different foot types, different foot shapes, which can predispose to overloading onto the end of your toe. That as a precursor to increasing the amount of stress and load through that part of the foot, and again putting the your foot into a shoe that's too tight. That again, coupled with perhaps sporting activities, is going to put a lot of pressure at the end of the toe and the nail, and can increase the curvature of the nail, which quite often then impinges into the flesh, and off we go again. So there is a an element of sports related injuries, and also direct trauma. People, as you mentioned before, can stub the old toe on a radiator, or quite often we get people that are coming in who may be playing rugby or football, and they've had a stud that's landed violently on the end of the toe, and that will actually change and modify the bed, or directly damage the nail plate, loosen it, and again that can lead to ingrown toenails.
Gosh, and is there any form of sort of, I know you said they're genetic, so this could be something that you just, you know, if your mum and dad had it, chances are you're going to get it. Is that the kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. There is, or there can be, a quite a high familial incidence of ingrown toenails between mum, dad, or maybe grandma and her grandson, whereby certain foot shapes, or what we call pathologies, that can predispose to an increasing weight bearing over the big toe, can lead to these conditions. And also, ingrown toenails, people tend to think, are associated with the big toe, the first toe. No, I see quite a number of patients who come in and the condition has affected the lesser toes. I remember a number of years ago, I had a patient, a young boy, came to see me. I think he was about 14, 15 years of age. And we actually had to operate on both sides of every toe, from 1 to 4. So the only toe we didn't operate on was his little toes.
Gosh.
So every side, every edge of every toe from 1 to 4 was infected, had an infected ingrown toenail.
So outside of infections and obviously the wrong fitting types of shoes and trauma, what about, you know, is there any diseases or anything that can cause these kind of things?
There are a number of diseases. Quite often patients can get a fungal infection, and the infection itself can cause damage to the nail bed and the nail plate, and cause an alteration of the curvature. And that can obviously lead on to increased pressure of the nail onto the soft tissue, and can often lead to nail disease that way.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's other conditions which affect the nail. Psoriasis is quite a common one, where psoriatic nails tend to have a weakness and a pitting in the nail. The disease itself can change the morphology, the shape of the nail, and then it can predispose to ingrown toenails.
And I suppose, like most things, if you're a diabetic or you've got anything like that, that can, you know, you've got to watch for this with particular attention.
Yeah, the incidence of ingrown toenails amongst the diabetic community, we want to keep as low as possible. As I said earlier, those patients who are diabetic, especially poorly controlled diabetics, they have this desensitization in their digits. And if they have a condition where they are prone to ingrown toenails, they must seek regular foot care on a regular basis.
All right, well, I'm going to be absolutely honest. I think most people do go in the bathroom in the wee hours with a set of clippers or with a pair of nails, a set of scissors, and they have a go themselves. Now, obviously, you must be more familiar with people who come in as a negative result of that. Is there any positives to it?
Yeah, of course. Really, we need to instruct people how to cut their nails properly. Basically, a lot of the nail, ingrown toenail conditions that we've seen are whereby patients are actually digging down the sides of their toenails to try and relieve the ingrown toenail. But to try and avoid this, patients should, or people should perhaps invest in a proper pair of nail cutters. Generally, the scissors type of instrument, or you see these sort of straight edge clippers, they don't really tend to do the job properly, because if you actually look at your nail from the top or side on, the nail itself, we're looking at the end of the tip of the nail plate, is actually, or should have, quite a nice little curve to it. A lot of people are advised to cut their toenail straight across. Well, of course, a curve is a curve, and you can't cut a curve straight. In using some of the instruments that they use, which gives you that straight cut, that actually is going to encourage an increase in the curvature on both sides of the toenail, and predisposed to this ingrowing.
Gosh, that's a common tip that people say, to cut straight across.
It is, and of course that's going to encourage the nail to grow around. People need to invest a few pounds into an instrument very similar to what we use in clinic, which the actual instrument itself actually has a concave edge to it.
Perhaps so you could throw a picture up for the people, you know, afterwards.
Yep. Yeah, that's not a problem. Yep, I can provide you a picture and give people an indication of what to purchase.
And you can probably buy them anywhere, can you?
Yeah, you can buy those from any supermarket or pharmacy. They tend to sell the correct ones there.
All right, cool. So let's just quickly summarise for people, because we're coming to the close. But the summary of causes then of what really causes these ingrowing toenails.
Okay, well, let's just go over those. Generally, the main causes are unsuitable type footwear. There is a traumatic incident where people have had a direct trauma to the toe.
Sportsmen and whatever, yeah, footballers.
Correct. There's and of course there is a genetic link with certain foot types, but probably the most commonest one is improper cutting of toenails, which is
so unfortunately preventable.
The category is self-surgery. Yeah, absolutely, it is. It's very easy.
Unbelievable. So let's talk about preventative measures, because I think prevention is better than a cure, as they say.
Yeah.
So where can we go, or what should we be concentrating on to help us, or to prevent the chances? You know, nothing's going to preclude us entirely. But where should we go if we wanted to, or what should we do to prevent ingrowing toenails the best way we can?
Okay, well, if people are prone to this type of condition, then really you need to seek professional care. The patients or people should normally seek the advice of a qualified podiatrist who will be able to very simply cut their toenails in the correct manner and trim them accordingly. This should be done on a regular basis.
Brilliant. And they should keep their feet clean, I think, huh?
Yeah, obviously, you know, foot hygiene is important, especially.
If the skin's been punctured, then of course, you know, infection in that area of the foot with a sock on and a shoe on, it's something, it's out of sight, out of mind, but it does harbour. It's the perfect environment, sweaty and moist, and you know, it's perfect environment, isn't it, for infection to grow.
Yeah, that damp, dark, moist environment is a great environment for bacteria to grow. So looking at changing your socks on a regular basis, I mean, a lot of patients who present with a number of sweating conditions where, unfortunately, the socks get damp, should we say, too quickly, take an extra pair of socks to work with you.
We've talked about nails. We've talked about nails shouldn't be cut too short. I think this is the real key to it. You know, the fact that you're saying that most of the problems are caused by self-surgery. So when you are cutting the corners, it is so tempting to dig in. If you're going to do self-surgery, which I think, we'll be honest, I think most people are going to go down that route first before they probably seek, not that it's the right thing to do, but if they are going to do a little bit of self-surgery, what's your recommendations, or what should they look out for? How should they cut their nails properly? Can they, You know, what is it they're going to need to do? Because I've heard there's lots of myths on the internet about what you can and what you can't do that's going to cure, you know, an ingrowing toenail. The old V myth comes to mind.
Yeah, well, we'll come to that in a second. Basically, just to reiterate, people should invest in a suitable pair of nail clippers.
Yeah.
They must cut their nails following the shape, the slight curvature of the end of the toe.
Yeah.
If the nail is having a tendency to dig in, then just by slightly pulling the flesh away from the area that's digging in there with a nail file that would use it on the hands, they can just slightly round off the corners there. The V myth, as it's called, cutting a V at the end of your toenail, well, it's not always a myth, to be honest, because we touched upon a similar condition called involuted nails, or nails that tend to grow round on themselves. And of course, as the nail grows round, the curvatures it increases puts a lot of pressure on the edges of the nail. So cutting a V in the top piece, the top middle portion of the nail, will in a lot of cases actually relax or release the tension on the two sides. So, you know, I've had patients coming in and they've said they've tried that, and in some cases it has worked. I think when the nails get to the stage where they become grossly thickened, then cutting that V in doesn't tend to have the same beneficial effect, to be honest.
Yeah, sure. Then it's time to seek professionals.
Yeah, especially if you've got an underlying medical condition in that you may have poor circulation. And of course, the one we've already touched on a number of times, in that if you're diabetic, and diabetics really should not touch their toenails at all. They should always have and seek proper professional medical advice.
So we've recognised, we've recognised the signs, the symptoms, we've looked at how we can prevent it. But if it's gone beyond that and people recognise, you know, they've got a problem, what's the next step, the management of that? What will that depend on, and how does that work?
Okay. Basically, when patients get to the end stage where they present with a nasty, painful, infected ingrown toenail, where they're unable to tolerate any hosiery, socks, etc., tights, or indeed their shoes, can't perform sport, etc., then there's only one answer, and that is to actually surgically remove the actual ingrown toenail. A lot of people I see have actually been offered a procedure where the whole nail has actually needed to be removed. And to be honest, if you're coming in where you have an ingrown toenail just on one side that requires some surgical intervention, what you really want to do is just remove the offending section of nail. Really, what you want to do at every stage really is to try and maintain good nail width, and not to remove sections of the nail that are not actually troubling the patient. The idea really is to remove under local anaesthetic. The patients will come in, they'll have two small injections at the top of the toe that will render the toe nice and numb. Patients will still be able to feel touch and pressure, but the sensation to pain obviously disappears. The patient then has a small rubber ring, a tourniquet, which is slid over the toe from the end tip of the toe down to the base. That what we call exsanguinates the toe, so the person performing the procedure is working in a bloodless field. The offending nail is separated from its corresponding nail bed, and that small section of nail plate is then removed. Mm-hmm. If left in that situation, especially if there's a predisposition to this condition, then what will happen is the nail will grow back, generally two or three times as bad as it was before. So the idea really is to provide the patient with a successful outcome, and the way to do that is to ensure that the nail doesn't regrow again. In order to do that, we tend to introduce a drop of a chemical called phenol into the exposed nail bed. That's rubbed into the nail bed from where the nail has been removed. It has to be a timed procedure. Just popping it on there and leaving it to absorb is not the way to do this correctly. Generally, you can spend between 2 to 3 minutes rubbing the phenol into the nail plate, sorry, the nail bed, so you're completely destroying all the nail bed cells in that area to ensure that no nail will regrow again. The area is then dressed and patient sent home. The procedure, when we do it at the Yorkshire Foot Hospital, is done, as I say, under local anaesthetic. It normally takes around about 6 to 8 minutes to do this procedure under local anaesthetic. The beauty of the procedure is that patients don't require any time off work. We tend to tell patients not to, of course, operate any machinery or drive mm-hmm. after the operation, because, of course, the toe is still numb for a few hours afterwards. Patients then normally return 24 hours after the operation. We remove the dressings that were put onto the foot during after the surgery, and then a small dressing is applied, and patients can return to work immediately.
Right, so it really is, if dealt with properly and professionally, it's quite as quick.
It is. It's a simple procedure. As I say, generally patients need no time off work, and we normally expect our patients to self-dress. We provide all the dressings required, and generally the surgery tends to heal in around about 10 to 14 days. Clinical data that we provide to our surgical faculty, generally there is in the region of about a 98% to 99% success rate with this particular procedure, which is called a partial nail avulsion. Avulsing meaning removing the nail, partially just a partial resection of the nail. In some cases, when the nail is grossly thickened, we have really no alternative but to remove the whole nail. That's called a total nail avulsion. And generally, we get the same result. Cosmetically, what you're trying to do is, the end result is to ensure that when everything's healed, maintaining good width of the nail means that when they've healed, generally, a few months afterwards, when everything's settled down, people can look down at the toe, and in most cases that we see, it's hard to even tell which side was actually operated on, which is what we want, especially for the ladies out there who like to put the nail polish on straight away and wear the open toe sandals.
Yeah, perfect. So I know when you say there, a quick operation, a quick, relatively simple operation, but when done correctly, can solve this issue. And when I think of how many people have had or are suffering with pain in their, you know, with an ingrown toenail for many weeks, months, or as you said earlier, maybe years, it just seems nonsensical that they wouldn't get it solved and sorted so quickly and easily.
Yeah, it is. And as I said before, the patients that we tend to see are patients who perhaps have undergone self-surgery or literally have been in discomfort for such long periods of time, they've finally realised that, look, I really need to get this problem solved, and that's when they come to us.
All right, well, thank you very much. I mean, the last sort of part of it is, if somebody's now actually thinking of, well, you know what, I'm ready to get this thing sorted, what's their next step? I mean, would they get referred by their doctor or GP? What would be the sort of route to get the procedure?
Okay, well, basically, generally patients will go to the GP. Some GPs are trained into doing the procedure I've already described. Those that are not, patients can be referred into hospital to have this done. Sometimes patients may, depending on the way it's done in whichever particular hospital, some patients will actually undergo the procedure under general anaesthetic.
Gosh.
Excuse me, my phone's gone.
Man in demand.
Yep. If there is a lengthy NHS wait, then we provide the procedure on a private basis at the Yorkshire Foot Hospital. For those patients that have private medical insurance, it's generally covered with the major health insurers.
Well, thank you. Well, I think that's pretty much deconstructed the whole thing. I really appreciate your time, Jonathan.
It's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you, Mark, and I'm looking forward to the next podcast.
Yeah, we'll look forward to it. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye-bye now.